Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We made a promise to you a few weeks ago, and I would say that we've done okay at trying to keep this promise. Some days maybe better than others, but we said the other day that we're going to try to have a hype-free offseason, that it's very easy to kind of crown yourself as king of the offseason, number one team, national champion of the offseason. A lot of Georgia fans feel like they've been there before with their team, and so what we said was we're going to try to be really careful not to do too much of that. Obviously, we'll point out what other folks say, but we'll try not to make just too big of a deal about that and try to feed into that hype frenzy as much as at all possible. Now, what I'm about to tell you about may seem like, to the untrained ear, it may seem like we are actually not keeping up with our promise, that we're actually contributing to the hype that we say when it comes to Georgia football we're going to try to refrain from doing. It may seem like we're out of bounds on this, but there is a very specific reason I'm about to share with you what I'm going to share. The other day, CBSSports.com had its list of top third-year players, which is essentially what you have to say now, just given all the weirdness of, you know, eligibility and extra years and things like that. The top third-year players in college football for the 2021 season. And George Pickens, the Georgia wide receiver, came up very high on that list. He was number 7 on the list from CBS Sports, a spot below LSU cornerback Derek Stingley, who came in at number 6. But it's not the ranking of Pickens on the list from CBS Sports that I thought was the most interesting. It's what the writer, in this case, a good friend of ours, Barrett Salee, what he said about Pickens that I found so fascinating. Now, as I said before, you may be tempted to say, oh, BA, this is just hype. This is rat poison. You said you weren't going to do that. But when we're done, I think you will see there's a very specific reason why I'm going down this road today. This is what Barrett Salee, our friend, said about George Pickens on the pages of CBSSports.com, ranking him number 7, talking about the kind of up and down moments for Pickens, certainly last year over the course of his first 2 years there at Georgia. Salee sums it up on George Pickens this way. Now that JT Daniels is entrenched as the starting Georgia quarterback, Barrett Salee at CBS Sports says that George Pickens should push 1,200 yards. Boy, wouldn't that be interesting. Obviously, we know there's only one all-time, 1,000-yard receiver in Georgia football history. There's only been one in the program's history. That's obviously our buddy Terrence Edwards. So Pickens just joining that group of previous, 1,000-yard, receivers would be a very big deal. But this, to me, is a bigger deal for another reason. Given where things stand with Georgia, Georgia's been a top-10 team now for basically every year since Kirby Smart kind of got things going in 2017. Georgia's won the SEC East 3 times. Georgia's clearly a upper-tier program within college football, right? There's that final threshold they're trying to cross over, that final barrier they're trying to get past when it comes to, winning the SEC again, toppling Alabama, winning the national championship. But there is so much that Georgia has done that most of the accomplishments during the season can almost seem commonplace, a little bit blasé, is that the word that I'm looking for here? It can almost be kind of hard for a Georgia fan to figure out, well, how good is my team really until I get a chance to face a team like Alabama in the SEC championship, until I get a chance to kind of go out there and do that? How good is my team really? Are we getting to where we need to be? What is the measuring stick for Georgia beyond just a big-time matchup in the SEC championship or, maybe getting some revenge against Florida come October, things along those lines? Sometimes measuring progress for Georgia can be really a difficult thing to do. But that's why what Barrett Salee says about George Pickens here I find to be so interesting, because not only does it give you kind of a hopeful idea of, wow, maybe George Pickens really is about to have a huge breakout year for a wide receiver and make good on all the potential that Pickens has shown here over the course of the last couple of years. But beyond that, this particular statistical benchmark, the notion of a 1,200-yard season, I think also provides provides Georgia fans with a chance to measure how the team is performing, performing week after week after week. Because if you look at what 1,200 yards is, and if you assume for a moment that Georgia gets a chance to play a 15-game schedule, which obviously would include a college football playoff and the national championship game, if you assume a 15-game schedule for Georgia, just for the sake of conversation, and you assume, as Barrett Salee suggests there from CBSSports.com, a 1,200-yard season, what you're talking about is 80 yards per game. I did the math on this before the show started, believe it or not. I'm actually capable of doing some simple division as long as I have a calculator to help me out. So 15 games, 1,200 yards, that's 80 yards a game. And that may not sound too daunting, but the fact of the matter is Pickens only exceeded 80 yards six times in his Georgia career. He did that three times a year ago in 2020, which was an injury-shortened season for him, and he did that three times back in 2019. So for as good as George Pickens has been for Georgia and as, you know, lofty as the, you know, the 1,200-yard, you know, seasons, you know, sounds here for 2021, it's important to point out the game-by-game benchmark that requires 80 yards per game, Pickens only done that six times here through 2 years. So if you want to judge how well George is doing along its way to, you know, maybe getting that revenge against Florida in October and then getting to an SEC championship game against a team like Alabama and actually getting it done once they get there, this is a great judge on that. You can't have the no-show games from George Pickens on the way to that. Now, obviously, injury is something you can't control, but in terms of delivering the football to Pickens, making him a primary focus of the offense, even when the defense is trying to take him away, if Georgia truly is a national championship-level team, that's something they ought to be able to do. Because recent national champions certainly proved this to be the case. The last three national champions have all had at least 1,000-yard receiver. Last year, Devontae Smith had like 1,800 yards from Alabama. The year before that, Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase obviously put up big numbers for LSU. In 2018, Justin Ross was a 1,000-yard receiver for Clemson. So 1,000-yard receivers, and in some cases more than 1,000-yard receiver, has been a pretty interesting hallmark that recent national champions have had. And if Georgia wants to join that group in 2021, expecting Pickens to exceed that 1,000-yard mark, that's just about a prerequisite. So to kind of sum all of this up, the reason I bring this up, Barrett Salee saying that George Pickens could have this really big year, if you're a Georgia fan, it's kind of fun to think about that as a possibility, but it's actually a little bit more than just kind of a fun luxury. This may be a true necessity, that if Georgia wants to get there, you've got to have a big year like this from Pickens. Otherwise, you're just a phony pretender along the way to a national championship. And how do you get to 1,200 yards? You show up and you produce each and every game. You devise a game plan that gets Pickens the ball no matter what defenses are trying to do to stop it. That's 80 yards per game, a very interesting number to watch for when it comes to Pickens this upcoming season. Now, let me kind of shift gears to something slightly different, although kind of in the same vein. When George Pickens chose Georgia in February of the 2019 recruiting cycle, it was a very big deal for UGA because Georgia had not really recruited the wide receiver position at the truly elite level prior to Pickens, and I'll add Dominic Blaylock, in terms of choosing Georgia for the class of 2019. Before that, wide receiver had probably been a position group that Georgia had lagged a bit when it comes to true recruiting success. The 2020 class brought a real wellspring of impressive wide receiver talent. The position, though, after that was probably not a huge priority for Georgia in the class of 2021. I would say in the 2022 cycle, the attention will be paid to wide receiver a great deal. Now that Georgia's kind of broken through some barriers as far as wide receiver recruitment, needing more pass-catching targets to go along with the wealth of quarterbacks this team now has kind of waiting in the wings here, what happens for Georgia at receiver will be watched very closely. With that in mind, Georgia got at least some degree of good news here in the recent days when Kevin Coleman, a five-star receiver, included Georgia here in his top eight. Pretty cool graphic from Hayes Fawcett out there for that. You see Coleman including Alabama and Oregon and USC and Texas, Georgia going along with Penn State, Florida State, and Arizona State. So there's all kinds of programs listed here, but Georgia kind of mentioned in the top eight is at least something. And as we said before, it's a part of what's going to be a major storyline for the class of 2022, how Georgia does with elite wide receiver talent. As I said before, it's been very interesting to watch the way that Georgia has collected quarterbacks. Obviously, JT Daniels as an entrenched starter right now. He, a former five-star. Waiting the wings after him, potentially Brock Vandegrift, himself also a former five-star. And then Gunnar Stockton coming in for the class of 2022. Stop me if you've heard this before. Another five-star quarterback coming into Georgia. To say nothing about guys like Carson Beck and others who will be kind of in the mix and in this discussion. But it'll be interesting to see. Can the presence of these quarterbacks also provide a level of magnetism that brings in receivers there as well? The kind of elite pass-catching targets that we said before, the hallmark of all recent national championship teams, That's going to be the big story here for Georgia in the class of 2022. A lot of attention being paid to skill position guys, quarterback in particular, and I guess the first domino in that potentially falling is a five-star guy, including Georgia there in his top eight. We'll continue to follow all these stories for you here on our program and, of course, checking in all the Dog Nation recruiting news at DogNation.com as well. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. It's so good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, with our friends on Twitch there as well. So much fun to be covering all of these video platforms, and happy to have the ability to be able to do that, of course, on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and as a podcast, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Thank you for being with us here today. And a big thanks to our friends from Pella Window and Door of Georgia for making it all possible. You know, Pella can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. When it comes to cold weather like we've been having, the idea of that energy efficiency really matters. You don't want the heat that you pay so much for to escape out of your house and, you know, leave through the crevices in your windows and your doors. You don't want that at all. And Pella Window and Door in Georgia can certainly prevent that from happening. This is a great situation because Pella is obviously a nationally known name, so you get the resources that come from a big company like that, but they're a locally owned branch right here in Georgia there as well, which means you get that expert service that you would come to expect from a family-owned company. So you get both of those when it comes to Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Also right now through April 1st, great offer for you to take advantage of. You can get 10% off an entire project or no payments, no interest for 12 months. Unbelievable savings on that. As I said, between now and April 1st, take advantage of that. Just simply go to this new website. I want to tell you about this. It's PellaOfGA.com/DogNation. That's PellaOfGA.com/DogNation to take advantage of that. Or you can give them a call at 678-638-1496. That's 678-638-1496. Make sure you get in touch with them. Of course, tell them the folks at Dog Nation a daily sent you, and they'll be taking really good care of you. Great to have Pella Window and Door of Georgia today as a part of Dog Nation Daily. All right, I'm going to get John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, I do want to go around the doghouse, and I want to talk about last week here around our website, because I thought there was a very interesting through line, if you will, on a lot of the content that got discussed. I thought leadership was a really hot topic for Georgia this past week around Dog Nation. It came up a few different times, but quite possibly the most interesting thing said about the topic of leadership might have been said on Dog Nation Daily presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia a week ago. Let me build to it this way. Very good get by our buddy Mike Griffith last Monday on his show On the Beat, talking to former Georgia assistant turned South Carolina head coach Shane Beamer. And Beamer, reflecting back on his time at Georgia, obviously has great memories of the magical 2017 season around Georgia. And one of the things that Beamer talked about was the guys that chose to come back, the seniors like Nick Chubb, Sonny Michel, Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy, and of course, a great player like Roquan Smith. The level of leadership they displayed and the stamp they put on their team right from the word go when the calendar turned to 2017 and the way in which that contributed to the success that Georgia enjoyed that year, eventually winning an SEC championship, making the college football playoff, winning the Rose Bowl, and coming within an eyelash of winning the national championship. This was really interesting from Shane Beamer, who was an assistant coach on that staff. Let me give you a quick reminder.
We didn't have a bad team in 16. We didn't have bad kids, but it just seemed like when we came back in January 2017, that it was just a different mentality, that Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy, those guys just said, you know what, it's going to be different this year. And the way they held each other accountable and had those other guys follow them, I think it's a testament to the leadership of those guys. And then obviously Jake Fromm coming in and playing like he did throughout the season as well. But that was another, you know, magical season, and I'm very blessed that I had a chance to be part of.
This isn't new information. We all know this. We remember that ourselves, how critical that leadership was for the success that Georgia enjoyed in 2017. It's been talked about, you know, quite often. But to hear Beamer articulate it in such a matter-of-fact tone, I think once again demonstrates just how important that leadership was for Georgia back then. Then there was another conversation. Do you remember the surprise appearance former Georgia coach Mark Richt made on our Cover 4 Live show on Thursday night? Richt, who delighted us on his birthday there, and I had a chance to talk to him about, you know, the magical run that Georgia went through in 2002, and Richt mentioned a speech that John Stinchcomb, who, by the way, will join us here in just a minute or two on our program, that Stinchcomb made during that Auburn game when Georgia had kind of gotten off to a slow start, came roaring back to win the game in the second half. And as Terrence Edwards has told us before, and Stinchcomb himself has been good enough to address with us on the show, that the speech that he gave at halftime was kind of thought to be a pivotal turning point in that game, the first time ever Georgia had won the SEC East in 2002 when it beat Auburn on the road there that year. And when Rick was kind of telling the story about Stinchcomb this past week on Cover 4 Live, he kind of said, listen, as a coach, sometimes you have to recognize when you're getting that special brand of leadership from a player, that as a coach, your job is kind of sort of get out of the way of all of that. So more on the topic of leadership, this is what Rick said after John Stinchcomb had given such a fiery speech at halftime of the Auburn game in 2002.
It was one of those times where I knew if I said anything after what Stinchcomb said, I'd have ruined it. So I just said, he said it all, man, let's go. And sometimes that's the best thing a coach could do is say, let's go, and not screw up the moment.
So I think that the Shane Beamer quote and the Mark Richt quote both, I think, identify just how much coaches value that leadership. Beamer still remembering that after all these years. Richt saying, listen, when I see player-led firebrand type speech as a coach, I know, don't let me step in here and do anything to ruin this. That's obviously how important the role of leadership is for teams that want to aspire to championships. And so the obvious question becomes, will Georgia have that level of leadership for this team coming up this season? And this is where something from Dog Nation Daily last week that I hope that you didn't miss, I want to make sure you hear this. This is really, really important. When Terrence Edwards joined us last week, Edwards obviously a great former receiver at Georgia. He obviously acknowledged that the 2017 leadership was crucial. He was a part of that leadership group that won an SEC championship for Georgia in 2002. But looking ahead to this team this year, I think that Edwards says something really interesting, that actually this team in 2021 may have the benefit of a level of leadership that Georgia did not have the luxury of enjoying back in 2017. Let me let you hear Terrence in his own words on this. Then I want to kind of put a bow on this topic. Very good from Terrence Edwards on the kind of leadership that he thinks that Georgia can get in 2021. Here's Terrence.
I think those teams with Roquan and Nick and Sony and that group, what's the leaders of that team? Jake was the true freshman and wasn't the leader. So this team, I think leadership is going to come from that quarterback position. Quarterback position is the common effect of a team that keeps a team calm. I mean, just look at Tom Brady this year. You go to a team that was 8-9, 7-9, whatever, they make the playoff, but his aura and his leadership just took that team over and took it to win a Super Bowl. So I think JT, now that the Georgia team believes, hey, we got a quarterback that can take us to the next level, and it's going to be his leadership offensively, defensively, and special teams going to take this team to the next level.
Isn't that interesting to hear from Terrence Edwards? The idea that, hey, traditionally we think of quarterback as being the leadership position. And Georgia in 2017, for all the leaders that it had, it did have a freshman quarterback in Jake Fromm. And listen, there's no doubt that Fromm gave Georgia some nice moments on the field that particular season. There's no doubt that Fromm's attitude positively contributed to team chemistry. But how much leadership are you really capable of doing when you are a guy fresh out of high school talking to players who've been doing this at the SEC level more than you have? I would say that Fromm probably did deal with some leadership challenges in his first year on campus in 2017 for as good as he was as a freshman. Contrasting that to JT Daniels, who's 4 years removed from high school when this upcoming season begins, this is a guy that's been around the block. He's seen a thing or two. And his ability to be a more natural leader the way we've come to expect quarterbacks to be, Edwards cites Tom Brady, the leadership he's shown for a number of years in the NFL, that's high praise and a tough comparison for a guy like JT Daniels to live up to. But the spirit of what Edwards says makes a ton of sense, that when you do have the quarterback who kind of takes on the mantle of leadership, all of a sudden that desperate need to have leaders step up, that important quotient to any championship team, Georgia may actually have a degree of that for 2021 that it hasn't always had the luxury of enjoying under Kirby Smart. I think that's really interesting from Edwards and certainly an idea worth considering as we watch leaders take shape for Georgia this upcoming year. That is Around the Doghouse here on our program here today. Before I bring on John Stinchcomb, let me give a big shout out here because I think a really fun thing is going on around the state of Georgia today. And I want to make sure that you are aware of that. The Food Industry Association, along with Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, has declared today Supermarket Employee Day. It's a great time for us to recognize the tireless, heroic work that supermarket employees have been doing all across the state state of Georgia all throughout this past year. We already know that supermarkets are the backbone of our communities. And for those of us who've lived through this pandemic, we know just how important it was and continues to be to have food on our tables. And we have been so thankful of that. Obviously, you're talking about our friends at Kroger all the time, but this is really about all the supermarket employees all across the state of Georgia, the great work that they are doing. And here at Dog Nation, we want to pause today and say thank you to all of our supermarket employees all across the state of Georgia, and a really good job by our state, Governor Kemp and the Food Industry Association for taking this time to recognize them. So for all of you who are watching our program today, thank you very much. And for the rest of you, as you visit supermarkets throughout the day today, including our friends at Kroger, please just stop by and say thank you to them for the work that they're doing. Really, I think that there's no industry that stood out and impressed more over the course of the last 12 months than the really, as I said before, tireless and heroic work that our supermarket employees have done around our great state. So great to get a chance to honor them that way. And I'm proud to be able to celebrate that here today. All right, we have a lot to get to before we're done. There were two very weird stories from college football this week, and we'll try to dive into those before we're done. We have some very funny golden shoes to give out here today. Y'all are really getting the spirit of that, and I'm having a great time doing all of that. So we will talk about all that before we're done. But for now, on all the latest things involving Georgia football, let's talk to our buddy John Stinchcomb here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And we'll get ready to say hello to John Stinchcomb, who obviously was really part of a topic we just discussed. John, I don't know if your ears were burning last week, but when Mark Richt made a surprise appearance on our Cover 4 Live show, the subject of the 2002 Auburn game came up. You've been good enough to tell us about this before, the speech that you made at halftime of that game when you guys got off to a 14-0 deficit but came roaring back, and obviously everybody remembers the David Green to Michael Johnson touchdown throw that really sealed that win for Georgia and actually led to the win for Georgia. And Coach Richt on Thursday was talking about just how much he remembers the speech that you gave there at halftime and the way that kind of rallied the team together. And he told us on Thursday, he said, hey, listen, after a moment like that as a coach, he said, the thing that I don't want to do is mess it up. I don't want to get in the way of all of that. Sometimes you just got to know to say, let's go. And as Coach Richt said, that's exactly what he did in that instance.
Well, you know, I like to fish, B.A., and sometimes I feel like my memories have turned into old fishing stories where a 1-pound bass has all of a sudden become a wall hanger. So I appreciate Coach Richt fondly remembering that experience. It was certainly a great memory for me and just glad to be a part of it. It's always fun to be a part of a big win that is memorable.
And my reason for bringing that up is not to embarrass you. It's for really something else that your former teammate Terrence Edwards said on the show last week, which is, as I said to our audience before you came on, it seemed like we talked a lot about leadership last week. Shane Beamer was talking about the great contribution that Georgia got in 2017 from all those, you know, Carter, Bellamy, Roquan, Chubb, Michelle group. And what Terrence Edwards said is, because obviously Georgia fans want to know, can you get that level of leadership for this year's team? We obviously understand how important that's been for Georgia in the past. But Terrence brought up a really good point. And this is actually the point I want you to address. He said that this team may actually be in a different position than 2017 was, and in some cases maybe in a little bit better spot, and that it has a veteran quarterback. You know, JT Daniels was from the class of 2018. That'll put him 4 years removed from high school once the season begins this fall. Jake Fromm, for as good as he was in 2017, was only a true freshman, and so maybe some of his leadership message is just potentially muted some because he's a little younger than some of the players that he's trying to lead. Daniels won't be that kind of guy. As a guy, John, who's seen all kinds of quarterbacks over the course of your football life, obviously working with Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints comes to mind here. How important is it when your quarterback has, whether it be the maturity, the experience, or just the level of play credentialing-wise that allows him to really step up and be a leader? Is a team in a better position, in other words, when it has great leadership coming from the quarterback position?
I think it is most natural when it comes from the quarterback spot, mainly because it's the person you hear most in the huddle. It's also, everybody knows, that's the marquee position where the media turns to them, the fan turn to them, and so it makes really good sense for the team itself to turn to that same person for leadership. Now, there have been some really successful teams that were, I would say their primary leaders were other position players. But I think that's the exception rather than the rule. I think you look at most of the great teams that have elite leadership, and the number one position where you find that is quarterback. Now, there's some teams that have found it from a Mike linebacker or a safety, or you know, guys that are just vocal, that just stand out and have special traits. I think back to that 2017 team, and you had great leadership. It just wasn't from the not to undermine a young underclassman in Jake Fromm and his ability to connect with his team, but he wasn't asked to step in that primary leadership role because you had such great veteran presence in that locker room that guys knew what the expectations were. They were able to glean the identity of who they were as a team based on, you know, the leadership that was already in place, and that wasn't placed solely on the shoulders of a young Jake Fromm.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, in the case of Daniels, before he came to Georgia, I didn't really know much about his personality. Obviously, I'd followed him as a member of the 2018 class, one of the highest-rated players, but I didn't really know a ton about Daniels' personality. But I've been very impressed with his personality since he's been here. John, I think that for athletic greatness, you need a combination of self-confidence that doesn't turn into like a gross form of cockiness. You got to try to find a way to be like, you know, humble and confident at the same time. And maybe Daniels is just faking it, because obviously something like that could potentially be faked when the cameras are turned on, but I get the sense that he's not. He seems to have that nice level of, hey, he believes in himself, certainly believes in his teammates, without turning it into kind of some sort of level of obnoxiousness. I think that Daniels, from what I've seen from him with reporters, to me, the idea that he could really be a true vocal leader and the kind of guy that other players want to follow, the vibe that he gives off from some of the interviews that I've seen from him, certainly leads me to believe that's a strong possibility.
I totally agree, and, you know, different sources, but those that are familiar with this past team, this 2020 team, got that same vibe. They have expressed to me that JT Daniels connects well, and what he projects, what we saw in a limited fashion just from an access and media standpoint, especially early in the year, holds true. That, you know, talented guy, willing to work, connects well, believes in himself, but doesn't come across as someone who's, you know, totally full of himself and automatically drives that wedge between him and the rest of the team. So that goes right in line with what you've seen and what I think he's presented to the outside world.
Yeah, I think it's exactly right. Let me transition here to something else. You were obviously a part of the athletic board meeting last week, John, and you know, the reporting that comes out of that is that it seems like Georgia has kind of weathered the pandemic as well as I guess probably could be done. The budget shortfall is going to be less than projected. Georgia still, you know, lost money last year, I guess, but not as much as maybe it could have been because of fans who opting out of their tickets chose to kind of leave some money in the coffers, which enabled Georgia to kind of keep the financial train running there a little bit. Can you put this into layman's terms about how much it benefits Georgia to know that it didn't lose as much money a year ago as it possibly could have?
Yes, and let me start with the fan base, the Dog Nation itself, and the support that they've given the university and the athletic department specifically. That is the reason why Georgia's athletic department is in a much different situation than so many other programs across the country, yes, but in the SEC. Being able to fund these, you know, what is it, eight-figure builds that so many universities are doing off of dollars that are current and raised put us in a much different situation than many of these other teams that have these huge facilities going up, but yet we all faced the pandemic and everybody was experiencing a shortfall. So credit goes to the fan base. Second, you know, Ryan Nesbitt and Greg McGarity, Nesbitt's the finance guy off of the athletic board, and Greg McGarity, obviously athletic director for so many years, they have always come under some scrutiny, especially Greg McGarrity, for their, if you will, conservative, if you will, approach financially of, you know, and fielded questions of why do we have these reserves and why aren't we spending this money? One, they couldn't due to these bond limitations, but two, best practices stated that, you know, you need these certain funds in case of, quote unquote, this rainy day. I mean, how many times did we hear that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago from Greg McGarrity about, you know, this is, it's more than just a rainy day fund, and he still came under scrutiny, like, what kind of rainy day?
Right.
Who can predict something like that? And, of course, we experience it. So coming into the pandemic, we were much better situated as a university than any other school that I'm aware of. And the fact that the leadership continues to provide the level of services and build, you know, that this Butzmir project, huge project, was well underway when the pandemic hits, and we're still progressing. It's still on target, and there's a lot of other programs that have had to pull the brakes and start looking at what sports they need to eliminate and where are they cutting the budget. And the fact that Georgia is able to continue at the level of care and provision for their student athletes and build in the university despite not having the funds that, you know, most programs expect. You know, you're looking at $153 million plus or minus budget on an annual basis, and to not have ticket income for football games or you know, truncated seasons for basketball and pretty much every sport that was affected, all those income revenues have very much been affected. And to be able to weather the storm like Georgia has is a testament to the commitment Greg McGarrity's made and really the entire athletic department has made, which has continued on through Josh Brooks, to do things with fiscal responsibility and in a way that protects the university long term.
Something else that came up in the meeting that I'm curious your take on. You know, I've been very frustrated by the extension of the NCAA recruiting dead period, and that's, you know, preventing coaches and kind of being on the road, seeing recruits and, you know, recruits getting a chance to visit campuses. And I did see a quote from UGA president Jerry Moorhead about how maybe the world of recruiting could never go back completely the way that it was with all the open periods of recruiting, and, you know, that maybe some of this may be done on, you know, Zoom permanently in the future, you know, more, I guess, virtual visits as opposed to full-fledged visits. First of all, I don't want to put any words in his mouth necessarily, but, you know, given the frustration I think a lot of people have about the way in which this has been handled at the NCAA level, what Moorhead said about that last week kind of got my attention. What was your kind of takeaway from that portion of what Jerry Moorhead had to say?
Right, well, I think we all know that the recruiting world has almost become the Wild West, and the amount of time that's dedicated. We saw a major shift when the early signing period was created just a few years ago, and how much that affected high school recruiting and when it was done and when you can expect these 4- and 5-star guys to put their name on the dotted line. I think it's just part of the evolution. They're trying to, I think, utilize an opportunity that was presented, if you will, from this pandemic to say, maybe there's a better way, more efficient way to recruit these young student athletes that isn't quite as demanding both financially and also on the time and resources of the players themselves, the coaches, and the universities. So, you know, I think they're looking at it as a holistic, is there an opportunity here to kind of adjust the way things are done that may not require, you know, Georgia's at the top of the list when you look at the amount of financial or dollars spent recruiting. And if there's a way to more efficiently accomplish those things, I think they're going to look at them. With that said, it's hard to replace those in-person experiences and what high schoolers pull from that. I mean, being on campus, connecting with the coach, connecting with the teams, I think is irreplaceable. But there's other ways that you can supplement that, and I think that's what's being looked at right now.
Let me go back to on the field, just kind of wrap up our conversation here a little bit. I think it's really interesting that, you know, last week ESPN gave some attention to five-star linebacker Smile Mond and Georgia signing, and I think some Georgia fans were actually a little bit surprised by it because I don't know that a lot of Georgia fans think that Mondon, given how deep that Georgia is at linebacker, is going to have the kind of chance to impress that ESPN last week said that he could. And, you know, I think you see the same kind of thing with like Amarius Mims, another five-star type guy where, you know, when you and I talk about the future of the Georgia offensive line for this upcoming season, I think we'll mention guys who've been here on campus more so than a guy like Mims, who's as good a prospect as maybe Georgia signed. But this is just a deeper program than it was when Andrew Thomas was a day one starter in 2017. And, you know, guys like that we've kind of seen do that. To me, John, this speaks to the program depth that Georgia's developing, whereas as many five stars Georgia's brought in, they just brought in a very impressive crop for 2021. It's almost like there's less expected of those guys from day one than there used to be, and to me that's a really good thing. We may be pleasantly surprised, and maybe Mondon this year could actually be as good as ESPN says that he could. And who knows what Mims is doing by the time the year is done. But the way in which we're not, as fans, I am one, expecting someone to kind of step in and save Georgia as a first-year player, that's not something that Georgia has to do necessarily in 2021. To me, that shows program growth. Do you agree?
Couldn't agree more. I think it's a gift to these players. I think expectations are high and remain high, but come closer to being realistic. It's not realistic for very many graduating high school seniors to be able to step right in and play at a high level against the competition that the SEC throws at you on a weekly basis. I think what's much more realistic is role play and recognizing there's opportunity for on-the-field skill development, but maybe not in a primary role for especially linebackers where, you know, I think of N'Kobe Dean a couple years ago where, you know, he got some good quality snaps, but most certainly wasn't the guy straight out of high school that you need. We don't need you to step in and fill this gap that otherwise is a glaring void on the roster. What I think, you know, as you mentioned Amarius Mims, what I think is much more important is how's the development of Roderick Jones and Tate Ratledge,
yeah,
and Clay Webb and Cedric Vonpon Granger, guys that have been in the program now for a year or two that they've had that opportunity to develop and came in with those same chops as the guys that were the new names that we're talking about in this 2021 signing class. So I think it's a gift, if you will, to these young players that you get to walk into a successful program that very much needs and covets your skills, but it's not a situation where from day one we need you to be a superstar. You are given – there's an allowance here where if you're ready, we're going to play you. But just know we've got a roster that's much deeper than the Georgia of the 90s, 2000s, and 2010s that we knew. So this is kind of a new era for us where they're given that chance to compete at practice against some great players, but also given a chance to develop, and once they're ready, can be thrown into the fire, but it's not out of necessity because there's no one else from which they need to compete with.
John, really good stuff. Thank you so much for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia today. I appreciate your insight as always, and I will look forward to speaking to you soon as well.
Always a good time. Go Dogs.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Fun to talk to John Stinchcomb here on a Monday on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Also fun to give you some SEC news, which we'll do coming up. And actually, a couple of things not necessarily related to the SEC, but just too interesting not to at least discuss. We'll do that coming up. Before that, though, let me give a shout-out to my friends at Merriweather and Tharp. Of course, you know them as good friends of ours here on Dog Nation Daily, but they're also big Georgia fans as well. Bob Tharp, his entire family, they love the dogs. They love, you know, being around what's going on with UGA, and they truly believe in their mission to be an advocate for you if you find yourself going through a divorce. And some of you, unfortunately, will have to do that in 2021. And I can tell you this right now, having good people working with you will make that process go so much smoother. Obviously, divorce impacts a lot of things. Relationship with your family and children, your finances, all of that kind of stuff. Merriweather and Tharp understands that. Your questions about the divorce process, they have answers for you on that. Some of it, by the way, comes via free resources, podcast posts, blogs, you know, initial consultation with one of their attorneys. They're going to do a lot for you along the way, but the first step belongs to you. Take the step to learn about Merriweather and Tharp and set up that initial consultation. Please go to this website, theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Merriweather and Tharp. All right, so I'm not even really sure what this means, and it's probably not even that important, but it is really, really interesting. First of all, FCS football this weekend, kind of nice to have that going on. It was fun. There was a lot, you know, out there. I saw where Lindsey Scott, the former LSU quarterback, no relation to the former Georgia wide receiver, is now at Nicholls State. They put up a number on whoever it was they're playing. 80-something points they put up. Lindsey Scott, the former LSU receiver, big play there for the Colonels of Nicholls State. What else did I see from the FCS world this weekend? I saw New Mexico State, which is not an FCS team, but absolutely got drilled by like a, I don't even know. I mean, so it wasn't a great weekend for everybody involved. And it was a very interesting weekend for Jackson State. That's obviously Deion Sanders' team. What a strange turn of events. Sanders wins his coaching debut. There's a ton of attention paid to Sanders there with the Bulldogs of Jackson State. But then after the game, Sanders got very emotional in talking about having what he described as his stuff stolen. Phone, credit cards. He said he happened to be wearing his chains, therefore they didn't get stolen. Then there was some initial claims from Jackson State that Sanders was wrong. His stuff wasn't stolen. It was just misplaced. Sanders then went on social media and was firing back at people who said that his stuff was not stolen. In this case, his own boss is there at Jackson State, pushing back against media reports that wasn't true, saying that it had been stolen. Then eventually Jackson State, one of their associate athletic director types, you know, goes back to social media and gave a new statement that more closely resembled what Sanders had initially said, which is that, I don't know, that whether it was stolen, whether it was misplaced, whatever else. But what a strange, strange thing. And really, it totally marred the coaching debut for Deion Sanders. And Nugget Warren, the one-time Georgia commit, did play for Jackson State there in that game. And here's all I'll say about this, is that, you know, Sanders has obviously generated a lot of attention for Jackson State. But this is where kind of Deion's ability to generate attention is probably not a great thing. I think there was a totally different way to handle this, whether the stuff was misplaced or just stolen. I'm not even really sure what the facts are on that, but Deion's projection of all this had a way of making Jackson State look very bad. And when you're, you know, Deion Sanders, TV personality, Barstool Sports contributor, whatever you want to be, generating a lot of attention and hype and, you know, made for TV type drama is probably a good thing. But if you want to be a football coach, downplaying drama is sometimes the right way to go about this. And if Deion wants to have a career as a football coach, prospective future employers beyond Jackson State, and maybe actually even his current employer, I don't know they all love what they saw from Deion in this press conference, making something seem a little larger than it was. Of course, you know, the facts behind the scenes will dictate all of that, but what a strange day for Deion Sanders in his Jackson State debut. There was a big national 7-on-7 tournament over the weekend there in Myrtle Beach. Reports are Deion Bowie, Georgia commit, apparently played very well as a cornerback, defensive back in this tournament. People seem to really like what he brought to the table. That's certainly good news for Bowie. There was also the weird thing involving Cam Newton in this, where Newton got verbally accosted by a recruit named Jaseth Owens. This video is all over the place. You can find this very, very easily. In fact, most of you probably already seen this. Owens was kind of mocking Newton for being a free agent, essentially no longer with the New England Patriots. Newton kind of fired back at him. And it's one of those things where, like, I think I would probably agree with what the general consensus is, that Cam Newton's in a no-win situation here because he's just minding his own business. He's contributed a lot to the 7-on-7 world, and this recruit essentially just kind of attacks him. The recruit has, by the way, come out with a statement himself apologizing for his role and what went down with Cam Newton. And frankly, I got nothing good to say about the recruit. This was embarrassing behavior, absolutely reprehensible. And it's important to note that I think a lot of people think this is what recruiting is, you know, young players, inflated ego, disrespecting their elders, someone like Cam Newton, who was just, you know, miles better than almost any recruit will ever be at the SEC level, this young man probably included. But I think it's important to point out that, listen, these recruiting activities, 7-on-7 tournaments, player development type situations, the recruiting process in general plays out all the time without creating the kind of egomaniacal behavior this recruit showed in the way that he attacked Cam Newton. So this was not a good look for the young man involved on this. Cam Newton, I don't really blame for any of this. What's he really supposed to do about any of this? He's actually released his own video that I think, you know, kind of sheds a little bit more light on the subject. But a lot of people will use this as a way of kind of coming down hard on the recruiting process, which they think, many people think, creates kind of a inflated sense of ego for a lot of the players involved. It's important to note that almost all of the young men who go through this don't end up accosting their elders and disrespecting former Gray players. This was kind of an outlier in that situation, but not a good look all the way around. Let me roll through a couple of other SEC through stories. Follow-up to a story we reported on last week, to kind of go in by newsman voice for a moment. So we talked about Tennessee reluctant to release Dylan Brooks, the pass rusher, from his press conference, from his letter of intent, and the thought was Brooks wanted to go to Auburn. Tennessee didn't want to make him free to go somewhere else in the SEC. Finally, enough pressure, I guess, was asserted on to Tennessee. They've completely, you know, backed down on all of this. They let Brooks out of his letter of intent, and Brooks, as many thought he would, immediately made his pledge to Auburn there. So Tennessee eventually does what I think is just unquestionably the right thing. But once again, we've talked about this before, the only language that many people at the highest levels of college athletics understand is shame. Tennessee essentially had to be shamed into doing the right thing here, but one way or another, they freed up Brooks, and he's on his way out the door going to Auburn. By the way, also Jamarian Gooch, an offensive line prospect, has also been released from his letter of intent. The internet is on and popping about Gooch rumors right now, so keep your head on a swivel about that. But Tennessee finally making good and bringing out some of these free releases on these letters of intent. And Dylan Brooks goes to Auburn. Gooch, we'll wait and see. And we could be certainly watching this one very, very closely based on the online chatter as of late. Finally, there's this. A.J. Johnson, you may remember, was a wide receiver that, once again, the internet at one point in time thought had a close relationship with Georgia. Whatever that was or wasn't, it's not my place to know. I don't have anything to tell you on that. But he has now made his college pledge. He's going to LSU. He's from Louisiana. He goes to Newman High School, the same high school that Arch Manning is the quarterback for. So this is a Louisiana wide receiver staying in Louisiana. That's not a shocking headline necessarily. But there had been some thought at one point in time that maybe Johnson and Georgia might be in a bit of a relationship with each other. But he instead makes his pledge to LSU, high school teammate of Arch Manning's there, going to the Tigers. So we'll make that your SEC through. And let me do a couple of things here for a moment. First of all, it was a very busy weekend around UGA Athletics. Huge shout out to Joni Taylor's Lady Dogs team. I told you guys, this has been a fun team to watch. We were in on the ground floor of the, to mix metaphors here, the Joni Taylor UGA Lady Dogs bandwagon. We were in on them early in the season. They got another big win on Sunday. Season sweep of the Lady Vols. First time that's happened for Georgia since 1985. Lady Dogs in great position for the NCAA tournament. Great job there. Also, the Diamond Dogs got a nice 3-4. I think I told you on Friday it was a 3-game series. It was actually a 4-game series. They played twice on Saturday and then also playing on Sunday as well. So the Purple Aces of Evansville did win the opener on Friday, but Georgia bounced back, and some of this was actually done in pretty dramatic, thrilling fashion, winning the next three in that series to go home a winner of 3 of 4 there. I actually watched a decent amount of this on the ESPN, the SEC Network Plus, so it's kind of nice to have baseball back after not having that a season ago. And, of course, men's basketball team, some struggles early against Florida, come back once again, not quite able to get that done. So Georgia basketball drops a game against Florida that obviously had been circled given the fact that Georgia had been pretty hot coming into that after the ranked win against Missouri, but not able to keep that momentum going there against Florida. So we'll get ready to wrap up the program, and a lot of golden shoes to give out today. Let me roll through these pretty quick. Yeah, I've gotten pretty fun with some of this. First of all, how about our buddy Mad Dog, frequent contributor. He gives us the tables turn here with the famous gif of the, or whatever you call this meme, I guess you'd say, of the guy looking at the Georgia Bulldogs, the new in vogue fashion for 2021. Pretty good job by Mad Dog on that, frequent winner here. How about Ben Green, who also a frequent winner now? You know, we've had a lot of talk about the props we have on the desk. Ben Green gave us his artist rendering of what it would look like if everybody got their way and we got all the props on the stage that people wanted. This is very funny for Ben Green. Who knows? Maybe that's what the desk will look like eventually. Very funny stuff there from Ben Green. Also, this is a movie reference that came up. Can I see the other one on that for a second? Yeah, Glenn Edmonds gives us the golden shoes now for sale at Marshall's. That's really funny. I like that from Glenn Edmonds. Maybe one or two more before we get ready to go here. How about our Gator Hater countdown? Let's just go ahead and do that and get ready to sign off for today. How about 250 days Gator Hater countdown? That's when the dog's going to beat those lousy, stinking Gators. Fun golden shoe submissions. Thanks for sending those in. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.